All right, بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. I think we're on Masala 5 or 15. And we talked about this, I believe, already. Yes, we talked about this at length. Okay, we can start with point number 16. There's a bit of overlap. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The 16th principle is that al-istiqamatu fawqa al-qirama, that steadfastness is more meritorious than miracles. And that's a catchphrase in tasawwuf in general. Fa'idah commentary, al-istiqamatu an ya'mala ar-rajulu كما عمل في كل وقت موافقا للشريعة والسنة. والاستقامة هي أكبر كرامة. A person may ask, what is istiqama? So istiqama is for a person to act in every action. أن يعمل الرجل كل عمل في كل وقت. That every action and every time is congruent to the Sharia and the Sunnah. And istiqama is greater than karama. Makatha rajulun, so istiqama is greater than the ability to produce a miracle. Makatha rajulun fi suhbati Junayd al-Baghdadi iddata sanawatin qala yawman ya sayyidi i'zin arji' ila shaykhin akhar. A man, he stayed with Junayd Baghdadi, who's known as the great Balwan, or like a chief amongst the Sufis. And he stayed with him for quite some time, several years. And so one day he said that, you know, oh my chief, you know, Hazrat, let me go back to another sheikh. Give me permission. فقال ولماذا؟ And he said, why? قال الرجل مكثت في خدمتكم عدة سنوات ولم أشاهد أي كرامة. I stayed with you for years. It's not like I stayed for a couple of days or a month. I stayed for several years in your khidma, in your service, and I've never witnessed from you any type of كرامة. فقال الشيخ يعني جنيد البغدادي وهل شاهدت عملاً يخالف السنة النبوية. Have you, and he replied to him, have you ever seen or have you witnessed any action occurring that contradicts the prophetic sunnah? فقال لا. So the person, the murid, he said no. فقال وأي كرامة فوق هذا. And he said, then which miracle is there greater than that? أخبر الشيخ بايزيد البستامي بشيخ صاحب كرامة. I'm sorry, صاحب كرامة فذهب للقائه. There's some typos in this actual book. فرأى من بعيد أنه احتاج إلى إلقاء البصاق فتفل إلى القبلة فرجل الشيخ بايزيد من غير تسليم عليه وقال من لم يستقم على مستحب كيف يكون من كبار الأولياء. So this is actually an amazing story. A person informed Sheikh Bayezid Bustami rahimullah about a person who was such a great wali that he was sahib karamat, that he had this, he was a saint on whose hand several miracles used to occur. So he was sahib karama. فذهب للقائه. So he said that, you know, he thought that he's going to be such a great wali, so he went to go and meet him. So he was, when he saw him from afar, فرأى من بعيد أنه يحتاج إلى إلقاء البصاق. That he saw from afar that the sheikh had to spit. فتفر إلى القبلة, and so he ended up spitting towards the qibla. So Sheikh Bayezid Bustami, rahimahullah, he returned without even giving him salam. And he was, while saying, مَنْ لَمْ يَسْتَقِمْ عَلَى مُسْتَحَبْ, whosoever doesn't have istiqama on those things which are mustahab, because it's considered khilaf al-adab to spit in the direction of the qibla. It's just similarly as poor adab to turn a person's feet or a person's back towards the qibla as well. So he said, مَنْ لَمْ يَسْتَقِمْ عَلَى مُسْتَحَبٍ كَيْفَ يَكُونُ مِنْ كِبَارِ الْأَوْلِيَا. If a person is not cognizant and scrupulous when it comes to the mustahab, then how can he be from amongst the greatest awliya? فَعَلَامَةُ كَوْنِ الرَّجْلِ وَلِيًّا أَنْ يَكُونَ جَمِيعَ أَحْوَالِهِ مُوَافِقًا لِلسُنَّةِ وَالشَّرِيعَةِ. And so the evidence that a person is a wali is that all of his conditions are muwafiq with the sunnah and the sharia. And this is actually an important point that could easily be lost upon the listener, and that it was muwafiq not only with the sharia. It's not a person who simply follows the rules, but he's muwafiq on the sunnah. And so a person who reflects the prophetic character, who reflects prophetic adab, who reflects prophetic morality and ethics, that is the person who reflects a prophetic depth in their life, in the acts of ibadat. That is a person who is going to be considered a wali. The 18th principle is as follows: مسألة رفع بناء القبور الأولياء فوق ما هو معروف وبناء السقف عليها لا يجوز. And this is that erecting the graves of the saints or raising them more than what is conventional and building a roof over them is not permissible. فائدة لا يجوز البناء على القبور كما هو في الحديث الصحيح فبناء السقف ورفع بنائه فوق ما هو معروف لا يجوز. That it is not permissible to build buildings over, like mausoleums, over graves, as it comes in the Sahih Hadith. So, بِنَاءُ السَّقْفِ, and so building a roof, and وَرَفْعُ الْبِنَاءِ مَا هُوَ مَعْرُوفٌ, and, you know, raising the graves over what is, you know, conventionally done. For example, there's maybe like a little mound over a certain area where a person is buried, just to tell that the person is buried there. That's different. It's not, no one would call that a mausoleum. But really raising a distinct edifice, that is not permissible. And this is important because it speaks to the ghulu that sometimes the muridin get into with regards to their sheikh. While it is extremely important for a student to hold the sheikh in regard and to venerate him and to show him abdu respect and to try to achieve fanafi sheikh, that doesn't mean that a person exceeds the bounds of the sharia in doing so. And that's really the marker. If a person, you know, for people who don't really have much love and veneration of the ulama and who haven't really tasted love, it seems very unusual and unsavory when they see muridin so in love with their teacher. And they just can't relate. And so with those type of people, that's one of the major, quote-unquote, objections that's brought. Actually, when I was in Turkey recently, that was one of the students said. He said that, you know, I see how the people, they treat the mashayikh, and, you know, it's like they're treating him like a nabi. Well, they don't know that these people, if they treat the mashayikh like that, then how would they treat the nabi? It's at a different level. And they don't realize that the only reason that they're treating the sheikh like that is because they see a reflection of Rasulullah in them, and it's actually a veneration of that sunnah and a veneration of those things which we hold dear in the deen that is manifested in respect to the sheikh and all these other things. But again, ultimately it's an emotional thing. I mean, if a person is completely in love with his wife, and he's always just, you know, behind his wife, many people in society who haven't experienced that, they'll find that unsavory, and they say, oh, that person's, you know, head over heels, and why does he like that in public? They just can't relate to it. So I tell them, you know, that, yeah, you should be moderate in terms of, so I explain to them, yeah, a person should be moderate. And then the whole idea arises that what is moderation? So mm-hmm. if a person, for example, wants to, you know, buy a gift for the sheikh or the teacher or any of us, you know, a person who taught them hips, can they do that? I mean, what is considered the line? And where are you going to find a hadith to that effect or a verse to that effect that tells you the line? Well, really, the thumb rule in this scenario is that you basically look at the bounds that the Sharia has set, and a person should not exceed any of the bounds that the Sharia has set. For example, if a person really wants to honor a wali and he says, I'm going to, you know, build a mausoleum such that people can recognize them and they can go there and they can quote unquote get barakah and these type of things, this is clearly khilaf al-Sharia, and therefore it's not permissible, and therefore it has nothing to do with the soul. The next principle, the 18th, mas'ala, يظهر من بعض الأولياء التصرفات والخوارق بعد وفاتهم. That for some of the awliya, there is certain tasarruf, and tasarruf is a very technical term. You can say supernatural powers would be a close, والخوارق, and خوارق are miracles, but when خوارق is sometimes used for anbiya and karamat for awliya, but the meanings are they're synonymous terms. You know, they both refer to miracles. And we say khawarik, kharaqa is to rip something, and so when they say khawarik al-ada, it's something that occurs contrary to the normal rules of physics and conventional metaphysics, meaning that it's a supernatural occurrence. Ba'da wafatihim, after the death. So here's the explanation. لم ينقضي فيوض أهل الله بعد الانتقال من الدنيا بل لا تزال السلسلة الروحانية فلا يبعد ظهور التصرفات والخراف والخوارق من بعض الكاملين بعد وفاتهم. That the spiritual effulgences of the people of Allah, yani the saints, after their passing on from the dunya, doesn't cease, right? It's not cut off. بل لا تزال السلسلة الروحانية, but rather their spiritual propagation and their spiritual silsila, yani their spiritual effects, you could say, continue onwards. They do not cease. فَلَا يَبْعُدُ, and so it's not difficult to conceive, and it's not far from the imagination, the occurrence of certain tasarrufat against some, you know, a preternatural or supernatural event, والخوارق and miracles من بعض الكاملين, from some of the كاملين بعد وفاتهم, after their passing on. And so the idea is that even though when a person dies, we understand that our understanding of cosmology informs us that a human being is composed of two parts, that it's composed of the body and it's composed of the soul. And while after death, the body, which serves as a vehicle for the soul, comes to an end and may disintegrate and pass on, the soul actually lives on. It doesn't sort of quote-unquote cease to exist. And that's an aqidah that every Muslim has to have. The proof of that, I mean, there's many proofs, obviously, but a very simple way to think about that is that how else would punishment in the grave occur? I mean, as a pathologist, we actually go through a portion of our trainings in forensics, and you already know, and we see, for example, how quickly bodies disintegrate after death, especially when they're not quote unquote preserved with, you know, artificial fixatives like formaldehyde, and literally there's a very quick disintegration, and it depends on how much heat and various other factors on how fast bodies disintegrate, And so we know if there's adab in the qabr, then how can that exist if the body doesn't exist? Well, while the body exists, it's associated with the body. When the body ceases to exist, then it continues to have a ta'alluq ruhaniya. It is that punishment is associated with the soul. So just like, you know, bad effects can reach the soul, good effects can reach from the soul as well. Masala. The 19th principle. أن رأى في المنام أن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم رضي بأمر يخالف الشريعة فلا عبرة بهذا المنام. That if a person sees in a dream that Nabi Kareem صلى الله عليه وسلم is pleased with a matter that conflicts and that contravenes the Sharia, فلا عبرة بهذا المنام, so then there is no consideration that is provided to such a dream. Commentary. فإذا قال النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم فإن الشيطان لا يتمثل به. It comes very clearly in hadith that Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم said that shaitan cannot take my similitude. قال المجدد وهو يشرح هذا الحديث وإمام المجدد الفساني إمام سير الهندي إمام رباني رحمه الله. He says commentating on this narration, إنه حديث صحيح فلا يتمثل الشيطان بصورته التي هو موجود بها في المدينة المنورة. That this is a hadith sahih, and we accept that shaitan cannot assume the form and assume the shape, the physical appearance that exists and that is present, that he is present with it. Yani Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم is present with it in Medina Munawwara. Meaning, however Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم really looks like, shaitan cannot look like that. ولكن يمكن أن يريه الشيطان صورة أخرى, but it is possible that shaitan shows a person a different surah. ويوسوس في القلب أنك ترى رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم, and he says he puts the waswas in the heart that you are looking at رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم, you are seeing رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. فمن يحقق أنه زار تلك الصورة الحقيقة أو غيرها. فالفارق لنا بين الحق والباطل هو الشريعة. Okay, so who will corroborate or who will verify whether or not that picture that he saw, that vision that he saw, is it true or is it other than that? So the distinction or criterion between truth and falsehood is the Sharia and the Sunnah. وَأَنْ رَأَى فِي الْمَنَامِ وَلِيًّا يَعْمَرُ بِمَا يُخَالِفُ الشَّرْعَ فَلَا هُجَّةَ فِي ذَلِكَ بَعْضٌ في ذلك بعض الناس يرون في المنام لا حجة في ذلك. Oh, that's the end of the sentence. You know, if a person, I mean, if Rasulullah says in order to do something, for example, take off hijab, you just don't give any weight to that. And so if that's with a Nabi, then even more so with a Wali. That نرى في المنام, if a person sees in a dream a Wali, a saint ordering them to do something that contradicts the Sharia, فَلَا هُجَّةَ فِي ذَلِكَ, there is no proof in that. بَعْضُ النَّاسِ يَرَوْنَ فِي الْمَنَامِ أَنَّ أَحَدًا مِنْ آبَائِهِ وَأَجْدَائِهِ يَأْمُرُ بِشَيْءٍ يُخَالِفُ الشَّرِيعَةَ فَيَقَعُونَ فِي أُمُورٍ ضِدَّ الشَّرِيعَةَ. أَسْتَغْفِرُ اللَّهَ هَذَا جَهْلٌ كُلُّهُ أَنْ يَجْعَلَ الدِّينَ الْقَوِيمَ أَدْوَنَ وَأَهْوَنَ مِنَ الرُّؤْيَةِ. That some people, they see in a dream their forefathers or their great-grandfather, great ancestors ordering to do something that contravenes the Sharia. And so they actually oppose the Sharia in that matter and they break the Sharia. And he says, I seek forgiveness from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from this type of ignorance, all of it, that a person makes the deen even lower and lighter, yani, even lower in value than a dream. I mean, like, where is the deen of Allah and what is the value of a dream? Are we going to put it under the foot of a dream? It doesn't make any sense. 20th point, مسألة. أعمال لا يجوز مباشرتها بالقوية الظاهرية لا يجوز مباشرتها بالقوية Baltimore. Those actions which are not permissible to engage in with external capacities and abilities. It is not permissible to engage in them using one's inner or spiritual powers. So, فإذا الأمر الذي لم تبحه الشريعة لا يجوز بالقوية الظاهرة ولا بالقوية الباطنة. That if the Sharia doesn't allow a person to engage, or has not made permissible the Sharia, if they're not permissible with using, you know, physical strength, then they're also not being, they're not permissible using one's inner powers. An example of that is أن يقول شخص توجهاته على شخص. If a person has the ability to give tawajjuh, and he catches tawajjuh on another individual, وَيَسْخُرُهُ لِأُمُورٍ مُخَالِفَةٍ وَيَسْخُرُهُ لِأُمُورٍ مُخَالِفَةٍ لِلشَّرِيعَةٍ فَهَذَا لَا يَجُوزٍ. So say a person is casting his tawajjuh on someone, and at the same time he's belittling him and making fun of him because of the fact that he's doing something that's against the Sharia. So هذا لا يجوز. So say a person sees someone sinful, if you don't look down at the other person and think less of them or start making fun of them in your mind and start belittling them, all of those things that would have been impermissible to say with your tongue, it would also be impermissible to do sort of in an inner sense. So even though a person might say that I'm casting tawajjuh, but he's saying, okay, what a, you know, terrible person this is, and this person's just like, you know, shaitan incarnate or something like that. I mean, that's not the approach. So what would not have been permissible to do openly would not be permissible to do to one's inner powers. And the second example actually is probably even more clear. وَكَإِنْ يَكُونُ لَهُ عَدَاوَةٌ. It's like a person has animosity towards another individual, لِشَخْصٍ فَلَا يَجُوزُ أَنْ يُجَنِّنُهُ. It's not permissible to make the other person go crazy with the tasarruf al-batini, using one's, you know, inner spiritual powers. So you can do that. You know, there's some people who have such strong tawajjuh, if they were to like let it go, you know, one of Mufti was saying, if Hazrat Ji were to like basically, you know, let go of his full tawajjuh, people would be plastered against the wall. It's just that powerful. But to use it for some, I mean, you can't use it to make a person go crazy just because you don't like him. I mean, all of these things are amanat, they're gifts. Whether the, you know, if a person has strength in their arms, that's a gift from Allah. If Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives a person strength in their heart or in their soul, that's a gift from Allah. And we can only use that for the purpose of good. So it's really almost like the, you know, the concept that, you know, if a person has, is granted certain spiritual powers, that a person should only use it for the forces of good. The 21st principle reads, إن اتفق صدور معصية من ولي صدور معصية إن اتفق صدور معصية من ولي لم يخل بولايته وكرامته إذ ألم بسر عليه. I don't know if this is special wording here. Let me see if I can open this up in the book online now. Okay, the website is back up. Okay. Let me read the commentary. I'll make it clear. So do a lot of different. Yeah, that's what I thought. Oh yes, this alif should be actually here. That's why it's off. Okay, the typesetting was a little bit confusing. Okay, in it the focus of duro ma'asiyat min waliyin. If it occur, if it happens, some type of sin happens to occur from a wali, لم يخل بولايته. It doesn't create any khalal or disturbance in their sainthood. وكرامته, and in respect towards them, إذا لم يسر عليه, if they do not persist in it. So the commentary is as follows: صدور معصية اتفاقا مقتضى البشرية. The occurrence of a sin by chance is a human dictate, right? It's a function of being human. ولكن الكاملين, but those people who are kamil, who are saints, يتوبون بعد مثل هذه المعصيات توبة, They make tawbah after occurring in this type of sin, such a tawbah, ينالوا أجرا لا ينال الأعمال عامة على الأعمال الصالحة. They make such a tawbah that they receive ajr from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, such ajr and such reward that the general people don't even get that type of reward for doing good deeds. صدور المعصية من الأولياء ممكن. So the occurrence of a sinful act or disobedience from the saints is possible. ولكن لا يصرون على الذنوب. But they don't persist in their sin. لأنه دأب الفساق. Because that is the way of the evil and wicked ones, right? The sinful individuals. This is actually a very key point to bear in mind. That no matter how great a wali is, or no matter how great a sheikh is, they're still human at the end of the day. And sometimes people lose sight of that. They lose the sight of their humanness. They still have the same impulses, the same, the same blood runs in their veins that runs in ours. And people sort of elevate them and try to see them as other than human. But they have this, they're plagued with the same, in certain ways. I mean, certain ways they live at a completely different level, and they have a completely different perspective on life, and they have completely different experiences, and they're living on a different plane. But it does, they don't lose their humanness. And part of that, you know, to err is human. And so they make mistakes, which is why, for example, just because a sheikh does something, sometimes people are very quick to jump on the fact that, oh, well, the sheikh does this, so and they use that as a rationale that it's okay for them to do that. And I've always been quite staunch against that, because you never know when that could be that, I don't know, one particular mistake that they had made. We really judge by the sharia. I mean, if a person's, you know, for example, and we don't know what their ahwal was for in a particular situation, you know, that they did X, Y, and Z, that maybe they were in some type of mitigating circumstance where they were forced to. And so some people hear about X, Y, and Z, and they say, oh, well, so Sheikh so-and-so does that. Well, that's not the deal, or that's not a hujjah, right? We really look at the sharia. Does the sharia condone that action? And the sharia, I mean, I'm not talking about, like, frankly haram things, which are clear. You know, it's like things which are more like, even in like things which are more in the realm of taqwa, where it's probably better or wiser to stay away from, you know, say that you weren't going to take a family outing somewhere, and you know, I'm just making this up, I don't know. And, you know, one of the family members says, oh, you know, it's probably not the best environment there. And the person says, well, you know, Sheikh so-and-so took their family there. I mean, that doesn't inherently become a dalil in and of itself. We really need to, we judge by principle. Right, that's basically the take-home message, is that we judge by principle, number one. Number two, just because a sheikh makes a mistake or does maybe something once in a while which is less than the optimal thing, right? It doesn't mean that we say, oh, they're not a sheikh anymore, what type of sheikh is that, and completely start doing nothing, criticizing them. That's not our approach, first of all, to any Muslim, but that's much less towards, you know, the mashayikh and the people who Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given honor, and our ulama and our teachers. Rather, we still continue with them in respect, and we keep the good zan that they've either made istighfar about it, or number two, that fine, yeah, they're human. But we look at the fact that, you know, if a person has 99% something which is just so amazing, and then 1% at a time if something occurs, which is not even khilaf al-sharia, but maybe khilaf al-awla, if a person were to turn away from people like that based on the fact that they're not perfect, then a person is just going to be left with no one to be their sheikh except their own nafs. That's generally what ends up happening. People who are that perfectionist and that skeptical, they end up criticizing this person, this person, this person, this person, this person. They say, when this perfect sheikh comes along, then I'll take them. And in the interim, they're just nafs acts of their sheikh, their nafs and shaitan. And that's really a travesty that people sort of take that over-skeptical approach. Just understand that people are human, and they have their human dictates, but you take the good from them, and you try to benefit from them as much as you can, and try to take as much nurah as we can from their hearts. That's really the take-home message. So we can probably end over here. We'll do the 22nd principle and run off the chapter next time, inshallah. We'll continue with regular meetings, inshallah, from next week. There is going to be a time change this Sunday, so everything's going to move an hour back. We will probably continue to just keep the class time at 8 and just peg it at that time, so just for continuity. So I guess that's it for this week. Jazakumullah khair. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.